Nigerian. Come on, Fulham. Come on.
Hello and welcome to the That's So Craven podcast, your Fulham podcast from down under. And we're here to talk about the Palace game, the one-all draw, the predicted kind of meh encounter that it was yesterday afternoon at Craven Cottage. And tonight we have, or today we have Skibby and Sam joining us on the podcast. How are you, Skibby?
Yeah, I'm all good. Yeah, just a little bit disappointed, but hey-ho, coming to the end of the season, so hey, what can you do? But we cannot ruin, so yeah, let's go with that.
Absolutely. And good evening, Sam.
Hello, Father. Skibby's always before me at the moment, and it's not like I'm like your blood relative or anything. I'm going to keep highlighting this as much as I can. Look, it's one of, the result, it was pretty, it was a bit of pill to swallow at the time, but in hindsight, I think it's genuinely the fairest and probably best result we were going to get out of the day. So in hindsight, it's actually quite a good result, if you can even call it that. But I'm sure we can discourse, and I'm sure we can actually bring some opinions and things, you know?
Well, thanks for your match summary, Sam. All I said was hi.
Yeah, should I leave now? Am I done?
Cheers, we'll catch you next week. Cheers for tuning in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Going back a couple of paces, another busy week in the Fulham universe, as always. Look, significant news this week. Tosin Adebayo confirmed is leaving the club at the end of the season. This has been about as a long-running saga as I can remember. It's obviously been rumoured for a very, very long time, and we were trying to work it out. We're trying to work out whether Marco had a cunning plan. Obviously, the club indicated very clearly that they wanted Tosin to stay, but that was out of their hands because he was out of contract at the end of the season. Can I ask you guys how you feel about it? Just briefly, let's talk about it in more detail a little later on, but just briefly what your reaction was when you finally saw that confirmed on the airways.
I mean, it wasn't a surprise. And I wasn't that gutted, to be honest. I think if you think about players who could potentially leave the club and leave us a little bit high and dry. So I was thinking, like, if Leno suddenly said, I want to leave, if Pereira says, I want to leave, Muniz says he wants to leave, Willian, we're still in, you know, he doesn't say he wants to leave, but he might still leave. But I think there's still a list of people that you get to toast and you just think, eh. I mean, if it was Bassi, I'd be a bit more annoyed. He's replaceable. And I think it's not a shock because everyone's talked about it so much, but my initial reaction was okay, fine.
Yeah, for me, I'm very irritated by this. I'm kind of irritated by anything that's really drawn out and a lot more painful than it kind of like needs to be. It's a bit like seeing like a loved one go through a breakup where you're just kind of like, just leave them. Like, it's not going to get better. Just leave them. And it's been so drawn out. And I'll go on record saying it. I feel like it's actually kind of spoken to Tosin's professionalism. I feel like this could have been handled a bit nicer and a bit cleaner. There's been a lot of kind of like alluding to staying, nothing really like confirming, but also not fully committing to anything. I'm really interested to see what the progression is of his career following this. It's been very clunky and very awkward. It's not as bad as like the Mitrovic situation, but yeah, it's gonna be interesting to see the rest of his career following Fulham now.
Yeah.
Look. Again, I'm interested in your initial reaction. I do want to talk about it a little bit later on, but I kind of, out of disrespect, I don't want to get bogged down on it, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
On a more positive note, let's talk about the That's So Craven Discord server. And for those of you who haven't heard about it, a more exciting thing that happened last week as we launched our Discord server. And for those of you who don't know what a Discord server is, it's kind of a chat forum where you can get your Fulham information from streamed in and copied in from various socials. You can chat with other Fulham fans. There are specific channels about specific topics. And it's just a place where to have some fun and to keep abreast of all things Fulham. We will actually include some details for those who haven't picked up on the news yet about the Discord server, and we will include that in the information accompanying this podcast. Also, thanks, Skibby, for producing that very nice little how-to video. And I think pretty helpful, actually, for people if they pick that up.
I'll share that again. I'll share that with my life.
Yeah, sure. And can I just say, on behalf of everyone, thanks so much to so many people for jumping in, getting involved and having, a very vibrant chat and conversation right from the get-go. It's really, really pleasing, really encouraging, and, you know, look forward to many, many people, many, many more people getting involved.
Yeah, it's very I just wanted to say as well, I hope you beloved listeners understand that the That's So Craven Discord is officially going to be our lives now. So it's going to be very this is the community. This is where you go. Some places are Patreon, we have this. So get involved.
Which is free.
Yeah, it's free as well. It's really extensive, it's really well done, and it's free. It's free.
Yeah.
You have no excuse.
And big thanks to Jack for putting in a pretty big effort over the week, and Skibby for helping out. It's a really, really great little server and great community, guys. So please, if you haven't seen it already, you haven't already got involved, please have a look. It's free. It's very, very simple to use. And drop us a message if you have any trouble getting around it. The third very, very exciting thing that happened this week, which may have gone under the radar somewhat, is that our very own Skibby and Dave met for the first time in real life.
Oh, my God.
In a pub near the cottage. Shared a beer. I'm interested to know, you know, who wore what and who recognized who and who paid for the first beer. And
did you use protection? Yeah.
You know what? The funniest thing is the first thing. So I noticed Dave, you know, it's like the spotlight in a room of crowded people was on Dave. It was like lovely.
Hungry eyes started playing.
Exactly. Yeah. But no, I recognized Dave. It was an embrace, a good greeting. But, and then then actually Dave saying, "You're a lot taller than I thought you would be." And I was like, "Oh, well, thanks."
It's kind of when Dave. You meet your idol, isn't it?
Yeah.
But no, it was good. And to be honest, that was all kind of down to the Discord. It just happened to be in the match day section. We just said, "Oh, I'm going to be in this pub." He's like, "No way, I'm going to be in this pub too." And there was a few things there. And I think Dave may have had a few more beers than me that day, but all credit to him. But no, it was good. And then, yeah, we managed to do the pre-match kind of thoughts together, so that was pretty fun. But it was a cool, relaxed atmosphere, and there was a few people in the pub that I recognized from sort of the community. So there was sort of Cottage Tactico was there as well, and then I saw Norik, the Kosovo fan from afar. So sorry, Norik, you left before I got a chance to say hello, but but no, it was really cool. But no, it was good to see Dave in the flesh, and the first of many, I'm sure.
That's cute. I love that.
Thanks for sharing your budding bromance with us, and we appreciate it. And I hope to see many more.
And it wouldn't have happened without this podcast. So there you
go. Look at that. Yeah. And if you want to find Skibby in the wild, just go to the That's So Craven. We'll post this postcode there just for everyone.
Yeah. It's free. Not an exclusive bromance. It's not an exclusive bromance, so there's more bromance to give.
Polyamorous. It's a polyamorous.
Exactly.
Okay.
Right, Crystal Palace. Right.
Hey. Oh yeah, there was a match as well. Sorry.
Let's talk about the match. before we talk about the match, let's talk about the lineup. We did run a little poll in the Discord, and we weren't the only ones. I think the Twitter sphere was alive with polls about what will happen. I guess many people, there were a lot of respected voices commentating on the Tosin situation. But personally, I felt that Marco would actually have the final word on this and would actually confirm or deny the truth behind this rumor by his starting 11. And but beyond that, many people were questioning whether Marco, regardless of whether Tosin was leaving or not confirmed, whether Marco would play Tosin, whether he would send a message to the dressing room, and just how that would play out. In the end, there were a number of changes, actually, in this lineup. As we all knew, Diop replaced Tosin. Bobby Decadova-Reed was preferred on the right to Iwobi from what might normally be our presumed best 11. And Iwobi started on the left, despite a fit Willian. And Willian was on the bench. And of course, the other contentious one, in the light of our recent discussions, was Harrison Reed was chosen to partner with Polina. Sam, how did you feel about all of those? Firstly, and again, leave the Tosin one for last. We'll have plenty to say. Let's just gloss over that for the moment. But tell me how you felt about, the Lukic, BDR, and Willian shuffle of the deck.
I know you want to produce the podcast well, but I can't not. I mean, it's just like...
I'm not suggesting we ignore the elephant, but I don't want to have a half an hour discussion on Tosin.
No, genuinely, it's more just like I just don't want to forget. But I just thought it was just so ballsy, and like I'm kind of used to Silva surprising me a little bit, but kind of like in the. Like when somebody comes up with like an 8-letter word in Scrabble, it's more like, oh, okay, interesting. Whereas like that was like he's legitimately going, nah, we're putting a full stop on this now. It's brave, very, very brave. And fortunately, Dia played fine, like serviceable, nothing overly special. But like it was really... I mean, I kind of knew Silva had that in him, but I was quite surprised. Then I thought Willian had a bit of a niggle, which was why he only played a bit towards the second half. So I thought that was justified. I assumed he had a niggle. But yeah, the Harrison Reed one, I mean, I know I was talking about it on last pod, like why Silva hasn't favored him as much. And it would probably make sense for him to put him in this game, if any, just for an opportunity to kind of like prove himself a little bit. But you say that, and then when you actually see it in practice, I don't know. I was a bit meh. I didn't really know how to feel about it. It was a bit odd. You guys say things.
I think Diop, given he hadn't played much this recently, I thought he did very well, considering there is an element of rustiness. He was up against Mateta, who we touched upon was a very big centre forward, very physical, know you're in a game, and to sort of be able to have to step in relatively last minute as well. So I reckon they probably only knew that Diop would be coming in probably this week. So I mean, yeah, there's an element where he's got to stay fit, but there's also match fitness, which is completely different. So I think there was an element of rustiness, but I thought he played very well, considering grew into the game, and that was pretty good. I didn't expect Reed to play, but after watching the game, this is why Marco gets the big bucks and I don't, because there was a very clear press from Crystal Palace, which got them a lot of success against West Ham. And we were struggling a lot as well. So for Harrison Reed to come in to be that kind of terrier, just chase down everything, really was the game plan, I think. And you just don't get that with Lukic or Tom Kearney. So I think that was a really good move from him in that sense, in theory, but reality, which we'll touch upon, I guess, in a bit, not quite to plan. But there's something about Iwobi on the left doesn't work.
Yeah, I agree.
It's one of those things, but I like Iwobi on the right. So when we've got Willian and Iwobi, I think that's a fantastic mix, and I think that works really well. But BDR on the right, I think I said it before, Bobby's Bobby. You get what you get with Bobby, and it's just not exciting, but it's not bad either. It's just so-so. But I think it was quite a surprising lineup, given the news and given Harrison Reed giving the first start. And I do like him coming in as captain. I think he's a really good captain. But it's just an interesting element when you haven't really got that out ball, which Harrison Reed doesn't really offer. I think he's a kind of terrier at chasing down things. But as soon as you kind of get the ball and win it in midfield, we're just missing that quality to be able to look out and find a pass. And that's where we really struggled sort of going in. But yeah, we can touch upon the actual game itself. But it was a surprising lineup for me. But not in a sense of tactical sense, but a surprising one of, I didn't expect him to go down that route, I guess.
Yeah.
When I thought about it as it sort of unfolded, I felt that, okay, Willian had a hamstring injury and missed the game, the previous game. So at his age, with his quality, with, you know, he's kind of that little prize that we look after. I felt like the changes that were going to be made started with managing him back into the team. And I just felt it would have been reckless in Silva's mind to throw him on to the game. So he was always going to start on the bench and he's back in. And then he had that almost, not a morality call, but it's kind of a, it's a culture call in terms of replacing Tosin immediately. As Sam said, full stop under that. We go forward. You're not part of the team. You're on hospitality. I don't know if you guys saw that, but that's exactly where he was, which was quite amusing. And I think so. Once you put Willian on the bench, you're now challenged to think, who am I going to play on the left? We all would prefer Iwobi on the right. And if Marco's a genius, surely he knows that as well. And then that probably, it probably instructs you as to who the best partnership is going to be in the midfield. I kind of feel like that's how the whole thing was built up. Maybe there were pure tactical thoughts behind Bobby Decker over Reed and his defensive capability starting, as opposed to, you know, someone like Wilson, for example, starting on the right and giving us near nothing defensively. Who knows? But it feels like that's probably where it was coming from for me. I really felt quite sorry for Diop. They pressed us pretty hard and right from the get-go, and his gangly little legs looked pretty rusty. And I was just crossing my fingers and hoping and praying that we weren't going to come unstuck as he took that 10, 15 minutes to get into the game and get back to Premier League match fitness. There's no discredit to him at all. It's just something, you know, he's had no rotation whatsoever with Tosin. He's been benched or not even part of it for quite some time. And like you say, I'm sure he's been training and keeping himself very, very fit, but it's just not the same thing. And you'd expect a normal reintroduction to be minutes in the second half coming on and just finding his feet, maybe at the moment where he could ease himself into the game. The game's a bit more open and they weren't pressing. But he had an absolute baptism of fire by the Thames on his knees. I thought it was really tough on him, actually.
And, he did.
He got through it. He got through it.
Yeah, I actually, like, as Skibby said, I think he actually did really well and he did ease into it. I mean, how much can we really expect from Issa Diop? God love him. Like, he's very rarely actually set the world light. If anything, I know him more for being a really reliable giant tree. But what I just wanted to say is, man, if you're going to have a baptism by fire, I want Calvin Bassey next to me every single time, and he was so great. He's so good. I love him so goddamn much. He's pretty much like my breakout star of like the season at the moment. I think he's been so fantastic. I mean, it's not as like electric as Joao Palhinha's first season, fair enough, but he's so great. He's so great, and he was everywhere yesterday, and oh, God love him. He's such a fantastic talent. I'll keep saying that every week, but he's just so good.
Yeah, so let's talk about, I guess, the significant pieces that first half hour. Jeez, I thought we were poor. We were lacked intensity. They came at us, fair play, and they were almost the Fulham of some weeks where they had a lot of opportunity, lots of intensity, and their execution was pretty poor. Even from their better players, they could not convert opportunities. And we were damn fortunate to get through that first half hour. Skibby, how did you feel sitting in the ground? Surely that must have been a frustrating first 30 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't next to a Palace fan, so that was a first for Putney End. So that was already a positive. But no, I was looking at my watch, just taking timestamps, like mental timestamps, to sort of mention on the pod, saying, yeah, we weren't in the game for the first 10 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, and just we just couldn't get out. It was just like, like I think I said, the press was so ridiculous. And it's almost like this new tactic, which I think is sort of becoming a thing for sort of up and coming managers now. I think they've got a relatively young coach, and it doesn't surprise me. I think Kotsitatsko mentioned before the game, which was, what are the similarities between Crystal Palace, Leverkusen, and, you know, I can't remember, I think it was like Inter Milan. And I was like, Jesus Christ, hopefully nothing is the answer to that. But I saw it, and it was ridiculous, because you kind of had a back three with the wing backs really high, unbelievably high wing backs. And then the wingers are actually kind of shadow strikers. And just Elise spent most of his time kind of in between Bassey and Reed, sort of in the centre mid. He would pick the ball up wide and really drive central. And then that left the wing backs really high that pinned back Robinson and Castagna. And it was just almost as soon as you, like Diop, if they picked up the ball or Bassey picked up the ball, he would look up. Reed was and Palhinha were being pulled all over the place. Pereira, bless him, was running his socks off, but he was being pulled out of a position just because he was just trying to sort of counter any kind of pressing from Palace. And I think the man for me who really made their pressing work was Mateta. And if you watch the game, or especially from my perspective, he was sitting in between the centre backs and the centre mids, so Palhinha and Reed in this instance, and they just couldn't find the out ball, and we just struggled, and we were just crying out for that Leno injury or injury just to slap some sense into people and just find out where we were going wrong. Because I mean, Palace looked immense, and if that was Man City, we would have been 6-0 down at half time. It's just because they were just lackluster in clinical finishing. Which is really fortunate for us. I think they only had a shot on target, one shot on target, I think, in the first half, which for their domination of the ball and just playing with Fulham, basically, was not a very good return from their part. But I think it's something that's, they've got a relatively new coach who's come in for Roy Hodgson due to sort of medical issues at the moment. So I think next year, give them a full pre-season, if they can fully refine that method of playing, they will actually probably be a top 10 side. Because I haven't seen pressing like that since sort of like the Liverpool Cup game. Only the top teams I've seen who really suffocate Fulham. And Palace were one of those teams who just stopped us. And to be honest, it was a miracle that we got in at 0-0 at half time. But fair play to Palace. I mean, that's all I got to say.
Yeah, I remember you guys giving me shit last week, actually, when I was saying that Palace looked quite good and they were in like a new transition period, and they were actually going... No, I don't think you were. I think you were on my side. but like the others were like, I don't think Palace are that good. But like, yeah, I actually completely agree, because they've got a very, very young side, very, very capable young side, and they kind of just needed a decent manager.
Oh, is that shade on Roy there?
I love Roy. I love Roy. But you know what? Come on. Like, he's always...
Get him off.
No, like, okay, like, genuinely, this is a place of love here. We love Roy, but you know what? I mean, if you compare him to, like, some of the newer breed of, like, managers at the moment,
I
like this intense situation. And when he had the players at his disposal, he could I understand why you want to play conservatively, because conservative works. But, I mean... When you have the ability to like harness that kind of like fusion of like players, I mean, why wouldn't you? I mean, it's worked wonders with Silva, and yeah, I think Palace are just crying out for a decent manager. I think they're going to be really strong next season. Dad?
Yeah, well, I think what's interesting about Palace, which I think we were kind of mulling over on the previous pod, is that new manager, I can't remember how many weeks he's been on board now, but it's not been long, and they've been pretty inconsistent. Really hot and cold over the last month or so, but they have had some pretty impressive results, and maybe it kind of tells the story of what's happening there, because they're actually putting in place something quite new. It's pretty exciting, actually. What they were trying to do was pretty impressive, and it definitely was something we were not coping with very well at all. As Steve Reynolds actually does mention on the live stream following along, is that Fulham still cannot cope with a press. But as you said, Skibby, that was a quite an impressive press for that first 30 minutes until poor old Bert Leno. I was really worried about him. You know, he developed some mystery illness, could have been long COVID, not sure what it was. But what I found quite amusing was he went down rotating his right arm, looking like he did a shoulder injury, sat on the floor rubbing his right thigh, and then looked quite confused as to what was actually wrong with him. And I just, and you know, on cue, all the players just rushed over to Silva, and I just thought it's pretty blatant. But hey, you know, we're probably the last to get on board here with this shenanigan, but. Geez, we really needed a break in proceedings for a reset, didn't we?
And, it was effectively mean to make Rodak run around a bit, though. Like, that was cruel. That's
a team game. You got to sell it. Everyone's got to play their part. But
I was sort of looking. Maybe I need to go back and watch the dugout and what was the signal, or whether did Leno take that on himself, or was there like some sort of cross arms from you know the fourth manager to indicate to Leno, mate, go down. I love the way how intensely the referee was actually inquiring as to Leno's health as well. I mean, come on. It was pretty blatant.
I think what was even funnier was the moment Leno was wanting was like a shot on target. So he's had to do something where, you know, injury happens, and it was a real grass sort of daisy cutter from Elise, real comfortable save, and he just goes, "Oh, I've twinged something." And they're like, "Oh no," but it was needed, and I'm all for it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to argue how badly it was needed. But anyway, things definitely changed. You know, I think Silva had worked things out. And had a new plan as to how we were to deal with it, at least to get us into halftime. And surprise, surprise, you could literally cut the first half into two phases, the first 30 minutes and the next 15, without any shadow of a doubt. So we got to halftime. Sorry, Sam, you got something to say?
I just got one question, just because I just don't want us to potentially like gloss over it. Because when we're talking about like dirtiness and just the dark arts, Joachim Andersen, how did he not get carded? Or how did he not get like more kind of like attention on him? Because he was, I'll say he was damn right reckless, you know? And like he's really taking the piss at a couple of points. And I was like, come on, like, I want to.
As I said on our WhatsApp group, you know, look like a model, act like a thug, and you get away with it every single day.
Honestly, pretty privilege has never been like so blatant.
And he's just got that kind of, you know, for the refs out there profiling, he just goes under the radar, don't we? He's the guy you love to hate, and you want him back on our side because, you know. And I have to say that we'll come on to Mooney's a bit later on, but what I really like about Mooney's is he gets given some very, very serious treatment. And you never hear him complaining. Maybe his English isn't good enough to complain, and that's why he hangs back a bit. It's possible.
I don't think that's the reason.
Maybe. I think you develop another level of confidence when you can swear in another language.
Maybe.
But you know, I love the way he just gets up and gets on with it, because I reckon that stuff gets noticed. Look at Gary Lineker, made a career of it. You know, he might be the bitchiest little player around, but if you just look like you're never complaining, when you do get taken down, I think you generally get the benefit. And well, it's not a bad thing.
I was just going to say, there is all this horseshit now of just benefit of the doubt with certain players. And if, like, Mooney's can actually get to a point where referees are just kind of like, oh, Rodrigo wouldn't do that. I am more than happy for that to be a thing and for him to just build on top of that. So
it's not like him to stay down. So maybe it isn't worth a booking. But no, I mean,
I'm telling you, it's a thing. It's a thing. It's an absolute thing. You know, these refs are full time. They know players very, very well. And if you've been in the Premier League for a few years, you're a known quantity. Mm. And, you know, if you look at the likes of Mitrovic and, sad to say, even a couple of our players, I think they probably have a reputation of just being up in arms at every bloody thing. Mm. And it doesn't serve you that well. Long may continue. And I think it's a smart part of his game that he's putting together.
I think
so. In we went. Sorry. Point,
though, if Anderson gets booked on a half an hour mark, completely different game.
Yeah.
100%.
If Mooney
is. It was really annoying me. I mean, he did so many quite blatant. Yeah. Yeah. Mm. And I actually thought, the ref was letting an awful lot of things go. He looked like he just didn't want to get involved and didn't want to be that guy that was blowing it up too often. But yeah, I didn't like the way he was letting things go. I feel that in the first half, we were probably on the receiving end of quite a lot of treatment that probably could have been pulled up. And it does affect the game. I don't care how you can go on about the fact that we should be better than that and stand taller than that, but it does affect the game. And as you said, if Anderson is pulled to heel really early on in the game, he wasn't even spoken to. He wasn't even spoken to or warned. And so, you know, quite rightly, he just carries on doing it. Anyway, we get to halftime, and with Silva being prepared to make fairly sweeping changes to the lineup, did anyone think that he might actually do something at halftime in terms of changes?
Oh.
I don't think so. I think tactical changes. I think this is something that I've always talked about, which is that trust in players. That he would love to get. He gives players a benefit of the doubt because he's got quite a good relationship with the squad. That he gets them in, tells them what to change, and if he doesn't see the improvement by sort of like 70th minute, then he pulls them. But it's very rare, especially in that instance where you're 0-0 at halftime. You've had that kind of talk during Leno's injury, and you're starting to see things change. So I think for him to take people in, give them a little bit more coaching, what we need to change, and then give them the benefit of the doubt. But for me, popular opinion or not, for me, Polina was the one who was kind of like a downfall for us, I think, in the press. He was sort of putting himself about a little bit, but he just wasn't probably doing as much as Reed in terms of closing down and tackling. And I actually think I put in the chat that I could see Polina, whether it be at halftime or just after, sort of being taken off for Lukic. And I thought that was a sense to me, which we've seen the stats where Lukic can offer the same, not the same intensity from a defensive perspective, but can do a similar job defensively, but have that ability to put a foot on the ball and find a pass. So that was my kind of take at halftime. I didn't expect the change instantly, but I knew that it was going to come eventually, I thought. But that was probably my thoughts at halftime, that keep it as it is and see how it goes.
Yeah. I was actually pretty anxious during the latter stages of that first. Well, very, very much so in the first 30 minutes. But I think we were very fortunate to go in even at halftime. I thought Elise was fantastic. Probably not his best game in terms of results and hitting the back of the net, but geez, he's dangerous. Mm. And I mean, Robinson had quite a lot to do trying to cover that side, and as did Bassey. But he seemed to just be able to carry the ball with ease and break through. I mean, he's pretty good on the ball. I mean, not only is he dangerous cutting inside and having a shot, but he's pretty good on the ball. He's a very, very, very good player. Mm. How much would you love Kudus and Elise in your side?
I think they're destined for much, much higher positions than Fulham, as much as I'd love to have them. But those boys are going to end up in a top six
club. Well, you say that, but someone recruited them into mid-table teams. So it's not like those sort of exist. Players. They definitely exist. Yeah, absolutely. Any other standout players?
From Reading, I think he was another point of mine. We've got to look at
a local guy. Yeah. Like Hammersmith born.
Yeah, got to look at Championship for sure. Like, there's so many good players in the Championship that just get ignored.
Yeah.
And then I think Palace took a chance on Elise, had a good spell at Reading, but it's paid off, isn't it? So, and I think it was only like 7 million or something ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's quality, absolutely high quality. Any other Palace players that caught your eye in the first Wharton. Half?
Yeah, number 20 in centre mid. 20 years old. Man, he looked...
Is he 20?
Yeah.
Yeah, man. He was, again, another one destined. Like, the player pool for England at the moment is absolutely ridiculous. Like, and especially where we're sort of coming up to the international tournaments where we've got Declan Rice and we don't know who to put next to him because, Calvin Phillips has fallen off and Henderson's aging and somehow manages to get in the squad. But that sort of centre mid spot's available. And there's, you've got Gallagher, you've got Wharton coming through, you've got Maino from Man United. Like, it's unbelievable the talent that's coming through in centre mid. And Wharton for me is another one. Like, he's very classy, very good on the ball and
He's got a brain. Well. He's very, very good.
Exactly. When we talked about football IQ, like how important it is, like it's brilliant that you can do all these tricks and find a pass and all of that stuff. But to know where to be on the pitch at what time is just something you can't really coach.
Yeah.
You either got it or you don't. And he was just finding these gaps and he was just unbelievable. And I think he was probably one of my man of the matches from my perspective. He was just everything that, Palace were managing to find the gaps and finding the ways to get forward. He was always part of it, and fair play. Oh, he's a talent.
Hmm. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. So moving on to the second half, the 7 minutes into the second half of the 52nd minute. Beautiful move. Yeah, absolutely. Oh, is that what happened? Is that what it was? Yeah. Well, actually, nice bit of sleight of hand from Bobby. I'm not sure if he meant to leave that or he just couldn't get to it, but obviously the pass comes in from Castagna, which is a good pass. Our man's got his head on it, who nearly smashed into the upright as well. But he looked pretty keen to get on the end of that, didn't he? And I'm very, very pleased. With all respect, Phoebe, I'm very pleased that he scored that at the hammy end and, for the home support who went nuts for him. And great to see him back on the score sheet.
Yeah, it's a fantastic goal. Really, really well worked. Honestly, that was one of those goals where I got really, really pumped for that because, 15 minutes beforehand. I couldn't see us coming through with something like that. It really, really changed the tempo of the game. We really, really needed to score first. And I love when Mooney scores. Like when Mooney scores, it just makes me happy. Like it's not that deep. It's just I love supporting this kid. I reckon he's great. Anyway.
And the dancing. I mean, it's a bugbear for most people. Is just like all these players dancing. But I mean, he dances every time, and I love him for it. I love a little bit of a Mooney's groove on. All about it.
I'm going to say, you know, I'm so happy that he's got a goal after a few weeks of going without. And, you know, many people have commented on that the true judge of the guy is how he's going to deal with his lean patch. And he's been fantastic the last 4 weeks. His effort, his contribution, he's been terrific. And I think he's impressed everyone. Any doubters that this is not a player, I think have been kind of put to bed. And I'm going to say that for me, even if he didn't score yesterday, he'd be up there with my better players on the pitch for Fulham.
Absolutely.
I thought he was really, really good. Once again, we talked about this. We've been talking about it for a couple of weeks now, but once again, his contributions are intelligent. His layoffs are really, really good. He made one, you know, it's a little bit over hit, but geez, he knew exactly where he wanted to put one ball where he was under intense pressure. Yeah.
Oh, what a ball that was.
Oh, it's incredible. So quick. He knew exactly what he wanted to do, and he was under intense pressure to actually get a foot to it. Mm. And even the little spin that he did in the first half where he shot one over the crossbar, but he had no right to actually get a shot away there. And he just works so hard, and he seems to be very grateful for being out there and just making a contribution, and the goals are a bonus. And I just love that about him. And it's so, so good the degree to which the crowd and the fans have taken this guy kind of into their arms, because it's I think it's just a really lovely matchup, because I do think it's carrying him. He feels the love, and I think he's just growing from week to week. Fam.
If you compare it as well to like Vinicius, I mean, everyone's a genius in hindsight, but it really just speaks to Silva for like sticking with this kid, because he must have seen his general attitude and general demeanor, because there was a very clear period where we were all kind of going, really, you're going with Mooney's over like Vinicius? Vinicius is a little bit more proven, and we couldn't really get it. And I mean, that decision to just back Mooney's over Vinicius, when there was a period where they were kind of neck and neck for who's going to be backup, it's just age like fine wine. And yeah, again, just as we like to do, just credit to Silva. He just sees it, doesn't he?
Yeah. And I think there's an element of when you watch sort of Mitrovic when he played, it was a long ball up to Mitrovic, and his first touch would never be great, but he would be able to sort of hold the defender off to sort of recoup the ball. But Mooney's has got this amazing first touch where it's down and he gets the ball out of his feet really quickly. And I think, and I may be wrong here, but this is just an element of what I see, but there's a little pinch of Pereira in him, which he's picked up, which is getting the ball out of his feet early and looking. So that cross-field ball to Iwobi was very much a Pereira ball. We've seen it time and time again where Pereira gets the ball out of his feet, quick turn, and ping, and just trying to catch people out. And I think that is sort of paying off for him, that he's playing with some great talent from Brazil, that you know, from Willian and Pereira, and he's actually kind of absorbing elements of their game. So the sort of the brute force chasing and fighting for everything is a Mooney's thing. But I think that bringing the ball down, looking for that early pass out wide, is something that he's being coached into him, both by Marco, but also with the elements of Pereira, and you're seeing what works on the pitch. And I think that's what we're seeing, them working together and sort of building each other's game up just to make him an all-round better player. And yeah, like you say, he didn't score for 4 weeks, but did he let him affect him? Not at all. He was fantastic, and he has been, and I'm glad he got the ball and the goal rather, and to sort of go in for bravely like he did. He could have clattered the post to get his goal, but it just shows how hungry he is. Mm-hmm. And I think that's just another element that you can't teach, is just that hunger to be on the end of something and score is something that you get in most strikers. But I think, yeah, he's showing that he is a package right now that any kind of Premier League team who plays with a number nine would want.
Yeah, I'm really glad you touched on the sort of finer points of what we're beginning to see with Mooney's. One thing that has to be mentioned, he's got incredible control of the ball, you know, particularly a long ball shot at him. How good is his chest?
Absolutely.
Is his ability to either control it and take it down for himself or chest it on for others.
And, I love and the chest actually,
oh, his ability to actually kill the ball is, okay, it's not quite Berbatov level, but it's pretty damn impressive. When you've got, Berbatov did a lot of those things in open play with no man on him, right? It's still impressive. But when you're a centre forward playing with your back to the goal and you've got a big man on you, to actually control the ball and kill it at your feet under your control is mighty, mighty impressive. And this boy's got some elements to his game, and I don't mind talking about it ad nauseum because it's exciting to witness, and it's an absolute treat. Geez, when you mentioned Vinny there, Sam, you know, it just seems like such a long time ago. It seems like three chapters ago that we were trying to get something out of Vinny, and it wasn't happening. And you know, Mooney's was just, for me, not even in the picture.
Yeah,
and it's a remarkable story. Remarkable story, and long may it continue. Right, so, a quick vote: is he our number nine next year? Is he the man?
Yeah, he's
absolutely.
The man.
But here's a question though: does he take the number nine shirt, or does he stay 19 because he's got a tattoo of RM19?
Oh, has he got a tattoo of RM19? I thought he had one of R9. Oh,
I think it's. I might be wrong here, but I'm pretty sure people can bombard me with "you idiot, Skibby" in the Discord. But I'm pretty sure. He's got RM19 on his arm.
Well, I know he was very wedded to 9 because he wanted 99 when he first came here, and then they poo-pooed that. So, like, I just want to give him the number 9 just to be like, we love you so much.
I kind of would love him to make 19 a thing, and for that to be the new thing that, you know, people and Brazilian kids and Fulham fans and Fulham kids want to have on their back. Uniquely makes it theirs.
You just reminded me, actually, there was Brazilian coaches in the stand yesterday as well. Watching Mooney. So he bagged in front of the coaches and Dave Anderson a torrid time. So hopefully we're now starting to see a potential centre forward. Oh, how great would it be for him to play with, like, you know, Rodrigo and Vinicius Jr. and just watching them all mesmerize defenses. Ooh. Oh, God, I'm salivating.
even if he's just pulled into the squad, even if he's pulled into the squad and doesn't actually get a cap for a while, but just the confidence that would give him.
Be around.
Knowing that he's thought of in his country as a player. Oh, man, that would be next level.
It's going to be his next tiers, right? Putting on the Brazil jersey.
He'll need to be sectioned.
I'm good with the tears. May there be.
I'm waiting for the Willian video where he's in the living room with Rodrigo, where he gets the call up. I'm waiting for it. I hope he does it.
Yeah. Okay.
It's not black, it's white, isn't it?
Yeah, Black, White, and Fred on the live stream has just confirmed that, I guess it might be fact, but he's confirmed that Mooney's tattoo says RM9 on his arm. So, look, there's probably a little bit of space there to stick another one in. Yeah, why not?
It is RM9. I just Googled it.
Yeah, and just another comment that Steve Reynolds rightfully made. We should actually sing the praises of Castagna for that cross. I glossed over it somewhat, but it was a pretty tasty cross. I mean, Mooney's made brilliant ground. He was in the right moment. But it was a very, very, very nice ball in. The kind of balls that we've been screaming for, really, for a long time. and that we our strikers haven't actually enjoyed the service of really on a regular basis. It was an absolute peach. Fast forward to the 87th minute, unless I've missed something. When Schlupp scores an absolutely barnstorming goal from fairly open play, really. and at that point, with 3 minutes of normal time to go, you kind of thought, ugh. To be honest, I wasn't destroyed, because there was a sense of kind of maybe this is a fair result if this is how it ends. But I kind of felt a bit deflated and frustrated that it went in so easily. Not that Leno could have done anything about it at all, but there was a little bit of a chat in the Discord about this, and Jack brought it up first because he went back and watched the highlights and was a little bit dark on Sasa Lukic for what Jack suggested may have been a case of ball watching. And I tend to agree. And I'll kind of add Wilson to that crew as well.
Absolutely.
Because Wilson was standing with absolutely no man near him. And the only carve out is that Wilson did have a man out wide behind him that he could argue he was having a quid each way in terms of, if a ball got played out there, then he could turn and run. But maybe it's just a case of very, very, very below par defending. Great shot by Schlupp, but he had absolutely no pressure on him whatsoever. And he could have taken two more touches, frankly, and no one would have closed him down.
Yeah, I think his touch actually let him down, to be honest.
It set it up to the half volley.
I don't think it was intentional, because he sort of took this touch, it went across his body, and you kind of see this element of, oh crap, I've let it go a bit too far, and you see Diop step and he just panics and hits it. You're quite right that Wilson and Lukic, there's got to be some communication there, because I think Schlupp came on for Ayew, so he was the winger. So for the wide man to be sitting quite central, someone's got to shout and say, Wilson's looking at him, Lukic is kind of facing the ball, which is this way, and he's kind of in his peripheral. So there's got to be some communication of, there's a player here who's got about 10 yards of space. It's just one of those things, potential fatigue, because, I mean, they're both subs, so they shouldn't be fatigued. But from the relentless press, chasing the ball, it's probably quite a difficult thing. But we always say that Lukic is not the best coming off the bench. I don't think he had a bad game, if I'm honest. I thought he did okay. But, yeah, someone's got to take charge in that position. And unfortunately for Fulham, no one did. But yeah,
I'm not accepting the case of exhaustion there. Those guys have been on for 3 minutes.
There was a thing though, after Silva made, and to be fair to him, I do think that he actually made the right decision and he didn't need to sub people off. But when I can't remember what were the group of them. I thought Breuer actually was okay. But there was
84th minute, Sam. Wilson replaces Pereira, Broya replaces Muniz, Kearney replaces Reed,
and it really deflated us. And like, there was that press that Palace did, and like, didn't they tackle like Kearney or something like that? And then it got really, really shoddy, really, really quickly. And I can't really make an astute reason as to why, but it got very, very clunky and very disorganized in a very, very short space of time. And then Crystal Palace just kind of just pounced on that with a goal that made my soul leave my body a little bit. But yeah, I don't know. Can you guys, was there something tactically?
It's the balance of the game. It's just the balance, isn't it? You've got Reed who, I mean, he was waving to come off anyway, so. Fair enough. I get Reed coming off. But I think once you take off Pereira and Muniz, who arguably were having probably the better games from the team that were on the pitch, they were comfortable. They were causing problems. And I just don't think it just takes an element of time to get into the game. So to ask Broja and Kearney to be 100% from the get-go, from the 84th minute, whatever, then they came on. It's just it's such a big ask. And I think, especially when you're taking off such key players, it's a big ask. And it ruins that kind of balance. You've got to phase it. And I say this time and time again, is you can't take off Pereira and your centre midfielder, and in this instance, your striker. The same instance we had the other week where we took off Pereira, Kearney and Willian. You just lose all control. And I think the same thing happens when you're asking Kearney to come in and just be on it from the get-go. It just doesn't make sense. You've got to phase it more. It's almost like what I do on Football Manager sometimes is just I lose track of the game and go, oh, shit, I haven't made any subs. It's one of those things.
Yeah.
And that's how it feels sometimes. It doesn't feel like he's making the changes to tactically enhance the game. It's almost as if he's like, oh, crap, my players are all fatigued. I need to do something quick. I think the Lukic change at the 68th minute was the right time. That, for me, would have been a great time to potentially bring on Broja, I think, if you're going to make that change. But I think, for me, if you take off Pereira, who arguably is your other striker, then you just lose all kind of outball and you're just asking for pressure. And fair enough, Palace didn't bombard us with pressure, but it's just, yeah, I think with Harrison Reed still on the pitch, even though he wasn't still fit, I think you've got someone there who would close down a bit quicker and just to be a bit more aware of what's happening around him. Because I think it was Wharton that picked the ball up. He had quite a lot of time, found the pass. Yeah, and it's just, especially when it's that core middle that you need to maintain, you just lost that.
Did for you watching, did Pereira look cooked? Did he look fatigued?
I don't think he did. He looked the same.
I didn't think he did.
I think he looked the same as he always does. I think he's always sort of battling. But yeah, Harrison Reed was definitely waving to the bench. And
Yeah. He picked up a groin. He definitely got an injury. I'd be surprised if I understand changing it up for Broja. And like you say, an earlier change with Mooney's probably tactically would have potentially been more effective. Broja still doesn't really look much to me.
He's quick.
Give him that. And it looks like there's something there, but I haven't really seen anything exciting. Not really one exciting moment from him. I might have been tempted to stay with Mooney's, to be honest.
I think Muniz was a bit gassed, and that's what I mean. I understand what Silva was doing. I kind of feel a bit bad for Broja because I do feel that maybe it's a bit of the Sasa Lukic thing. If he potentially starts, I think he's actually capable of being a pretty decent set of hands up there. But Muniz is just better. That's just the long and short of it.
Oh, it must be very difficult for him to be motivated, Broja, I'm talking about now. You know, it's so clear. He's in the shadow of Mooney's. It's just not going to happen. He's not going to get another opportunity at all. The season's done for him. So it must be, I feel sorry for the guy. It hasn't worked out at all. Anything else to comment on there, guys?
I think that was the main thing, really.
How did you think Leno did overall?
I mean, I didn't want Rodak to come on, and I feel like that says everything.
I don't think that's not really answering my question because I think
I know
every single week.
I know
the only goal he conceded was an absolute worldie. So I mean, you can't really say much about it. I think there was a couple of times where he made some good saves. There was a couple of times he played Bassey into trouble. I thought where there was in the first half, especially when we were struggling with the press, that. I think Diop picked the ball up, played it to Leno, who then tried to do first time to Bassey, and it got stuck under his feet. And I was just like, bloody hell, Leno, just like we needed to reset and just absolutely clear it at that point. But I would say that he had a solid game, but it's almost like he's Mr. Dependable. So it's kind of expected.
Yeah. To be fair, I thought he did actually take the initiative. And when the press was pretty relentless, rather than trying to pray through, he did put in a surprising number of long balls yesterday to clear things and just get us out of trouble, which, you know, was the right thing. guys, we've got a few questions which have come through on the Discord, and thanks to everyone who provided that through the course of today. I'd just like to run a couple of these past you. This one's from Fulham Fan News, who's thank you again, guys, for jumping into the Discord and for all your commentary so far and your engagement. Really appreciate that. This one says, with Mooney's proving he's more than capable to lead the line, do you think the recruitment plan for the summer has changed from desperately needing a striker to more players that can support and bring the best from Mooney's?
I'm quite interested in your opinion on this, because I understand the logic of bringing in more players to support Mooney's, but I think long term that's actually not a very good idea, because you should, I mean, if Mooney's goes, then that long term plan just kind of fails. I think we definitely need to consider bringing in another striker of equal quality. One, to keep him on his toes. Two, we just need backup, because, I mean, if Breyer comes on, we know that nothing's going to happen. It's indicative of a deeper problem there. And there's so many strikers in the Premier League that can provide that. I actually don't want even somebody to be brought in as a quote-unquote second fiddle. I want direct competition for Mooney's. And I think he's still at a point where you could still dangle the carrot in front of somebody half decent and get a pretty decent player there. I want to see that happen.
I think answering the question, I think 100%. I think we were really panicked around losing a 12 to 15 goal a season striker in Mitrovic. But given his recent form, considering he didn't even actually score a goal until February, and I don't think he started until, it must have been January, February time. His return has been fantastic. So I think, given him a full season, I think we've definitely got a goal scorer there. For me, I think it's been really obvious in the last few weeks that we just don't have that Willian backup. The wingers especially, I would love to sort out a left winger. I think we definitely need to find those players that can feed him, because I think we know what Mooney's can do with a decent cross into the box. And I think at the moment, we're just not able to create as such, especially when Willian is missing. Like Iwobi tries his best, but no to no avail, really. And Bobby Decker-Overeem similarly just isn't that kind of guy that you want. We talked about the Kudos. We talked about the Elises, those people that will get at the defender, take it to the byline, or just try and look for that pullback, because Mooney's has proven that he will score. He can find those little pockets of space. He can take those slap shots where you think he's got no chance of scoring here, and he can do that, and he can bring that to the team. We just need those people that are able to be that extra level, getting in behind and just pulling it into the space where he will be in order for him to score. But I mean, an interesting thought I was thinking the other day was, I've been speaking to some Birmingham fans around Stansfield and what actually he brings to the table, and they say a great goal scorer, but the real the attribute that everybody loves is his work ethic. He just chases everything, apparently. And I was thinking, how great would that be in that sort of Pereira role, where you're chasing everything down, and yet you've got someone next to you who can sort of feed off. That would be an interesting development for me, is if we almost play two strikers, but one who's just running their head off in Stansfield and just closing down everything and trying to win it back, and Mooney's being that kind of goal scorer. But then also bringing goals into the game, because we know Stansfield can finish. I think that would be an interesting thing that I'd like to see in pre-season. But I think, yeah, definitely focused on finding that left winger, finding that real extra next level talent that we can, if we lose Willian, even if we don't, someone who can come in and do that for us. But then also focusing on that centre back as Tosin is leaving. And I don't think Diop is the way forward. So I think it is a blessing in disguise that we're able to find something that we already have to fix a hole. And then we can start focusing on other areas, centre back and wingers, especially for me.
Well, thanks, guys. I'm not even going to add to that, because I think you've both covered it really well. We've got another question, a couple of more questions here. One from Fulham Texan fan. I think that might be Eddie. Do you think Diop is the answer long-term at right centre-back? Personally, he looked uncomfortable the entire first half, seemed better in the second half.
Did anyone look comfortable in the first half?
Yeah.
Well, I think, taking that aside, because I think you're right, but...
He had some rustiness.
How do we feel beyond his rustiness, which I think was to be expected, and he did get beyond that because he did improve. The question is, does he replace Tosin and have we nothing more to worry about, or do we need to go shopping in summer for someone else to rotate with him, or possibly for someone else to actually start and Diop to be the backup?
I think he is a great squad player. I think he's shown that he can come in, and I think he's still got that quality about him. And I think if somebody said to me that it's going to be Bassey and Diop going forward next season, I wouldn't be too worried, if I'm honest. But where we are in the league and how we've been playing under Marco, I always want bigger and better. I think that he would be a fantastic squad player to have. And if we can find the right-sided equivalent of Bassey, then I'm all for it. I think we should always aim for those sort of world-class centre-backs. But I think he can be the answer long-term, and long-term being next season, I would say. But I think I would be disappointed if we weren't looking in the market for a full replacement for Tosin, who will take that centre-back position going forward. But yeah, I won't be... I think there's a player in Diop still. I think we saw it yesterday, considering I can't remember the last time he started a game. I think it must have been probably around sort of February time, June, January time, if not before. So to come into April, nearly May, for the first start in months, then that's a pretty good performance from my sort of point. If we can train and coach out the mistakes and get him a little bit more... where he gets relaxed and sort of switches off. I think if we can coach that out of him, then we've got a great player. He's a physical guy. He's huge. And I think he's a great asset to have at centre-back. But if we can just train those mistakes out of him, then I definitely think he could be the answer going forward. But like I said, bigger and better. I always want those sort of top talents to come to Fulham. So why not look for... Like, I'm saying that we should have a winger on our list. We should have a striker on our list. Yeah, we got Muniz as a striker, but as Sam said, get someone, like, aim for the top. Like, aim for those people who are going to... Don't just say, oh, yeah, we'll just get in a freebie like Tosin because, you know, he'll just make up the numbers. But we want someone who is best in class in that position stats-wise that we can bring into the squad. And I don't think we should go into next season and saying everyone's definitely got a place in the first 11. Everyone should fight for their position. Therefore, we should go for the best in class. And if we can find one, then absolutely, then why not?
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, I think I'm probably a little bit more stringent on the matter than Skibby is. I like Diop. I definitely don't want to get rid of him anytime soon because I think that he's a solid rotation and like a decent option if required. But he hasn't given me reason to kind of be fully comfortable with him being a starting centre back at the moment. I would want to sign someone new. I would want to, and you know what? We've actually proven we're very capable of finding these decent players. And this is why I'm kind of annoyed at Tosin as well, because I feel that Tosin has kind of like hindered a lot of us exploring into new centre backs. Because I mean, we've done it with Bassey. We bought Diop in as a rotation player who actually excelled because he was originally brought in as somebody to just basically kind of be a part of like the rotation of the squad because we actually had quite a deep pull at that point. There's plenty of young talent out there who need to be the guy at a club, and I want to offer that up to some budding young talent. And also as well, like, bless D up. He's 27, like 27 turning 28. I'm not sure how much more we can, teach him or like really rework him. I think we probably are pretty close to seeing the absolute best of him. I mean, obviously players' careers are much longer than they've ever been now, but I think we probably have seen the peak of what he can actually offer us, and it's still very valuable, but I want better.
Mm. I think that those are really good comments, guys. My twist on this is I think we've seen the introduction of Calvin Bassey and how great and what a revelation and a rock and an absolutely aggressive kind of beast he's been at centre back. And for me, I want an equal at right centre back. Of that sort of quality, of that level of aggression, that level of skill, really, with someone who can play out with his feet, good in the air, young. And, you know, no disrespect at all to Diop. He's a good servant. I think one thing I would say about Diop is we don't get the best of him when we use him in short bursts. He needs weeks and weeks and weeks in the role. And because he was pretty good for us when he was playing regularly. You know, obviously he had the odd area in. And I think you're right, Sam. I do think we know where his high watermark is. So yeah, I'd like to see someone exciting new come in to replace him.
I think there's another thing about partnership as well, that you can get away with one of the partners not being as good as, but if they complement each other, then you're onto something special. And I mean, this may be a real unpopular opinion, but Hangeland and Aaron Hughes come to mind. Yeah. Like Aaron Hughes, when he came to Fulham, was not really the most high thought of Premier League centre back in the league. But I think the partnership that he managed to build with Hangeland made us this absolute force defensively. And I think it was more in the fact that, you know, you kind of had little and large. You kind of had, you know, Hangeland would always sort of be that physicality or the physical player that would sort of deal with that side of the game, whereas Aaron Hughes was a lot more, you know, basics. If that's the right word. So I think if Bassey and Diop could complement each other, where you've kind of got Diop doing the dirty, you know, the real physical, brutish stuff, and, you know, just laying it off to Bassey to then sort of find that out ball, that could be something that we could look to go forward. And I think you don't necessarily have to have top centre-backs playing together. I mean, you've kind of, Brighton comes to mind, when you've got Lewis Dunk and Webster, you've kind of got this gangly bloke who, you know, is pretty good on the ball, makes mistakes, but, you know, playing with Webster, who's a bit better on the ball, they actually complement each other really well. And I think that's something that I can vision with Bassey and Diop starting. And I think that's something we could have going forward, but time will tell.
Yeah, look, my apologies to Black, White and Fred, who's both following on and also kindly sent in a question which I overlooked reading out. But I actually think we've answered it, but I will read it out. It's pretty much along the same line, which I realized why Jack put this on the same page. And his question was, how do we think Diop did yesterday? He seemed to start a little rusty and grow into the game. Is he going to be a starter next season, or do we need to find a new center back? Hopefully we've answered your question, Black, White and Fred, both now and through the whole pod, actually. We've been talking about it but pretty consistently, because I think it is pretty topical. So to our last question, guys. This is a question from Zed in the discourse. It is a discourse, isn't it? What level do you think Tosin can actually play at? Is he a little delusional, thinking he's anything more than a mid-table Premier League centre-back?
Look, I don't think he's delusional. I mean, in order to be a Premier League player, you have to have an element of delusion about you. You have to truly believe that you're the absolute best and you can achieve absolutely anything. The sky's the limit. I truly believe his attitude will let him down. I think, and it, this isn't even necessarily in kind of like an airy fairy kind of like, oh, it's good to be nice. I think if you think of like the professionalism of say like a Messi, for example, I know it's a slippery slope argument, but very few people, if any, have a very bad word to say about Messi. I mean, people like Brazilian Ronaldo, Fat Ronaldo. Again, very few people have any bad words to say about him. It's not, and this is a great message for our younger viewers. It's to be nice and a good person to work with is actually a thing that can seriously benefit you long term. And I think if you actually like, if you think that you're better than where you are, it's not necessarily going to bode well for you in the future, because these ideas kind of carry on, and all it does is signal to managers, well, you think you're too good for Fulham and you want to come here. I'm not really sure how I feel about that. Polina is an amazing example of this. Polina was out the door, had one foot in Bayern Munich, and then came back to work the next day, ready to basically put everything behind him and then just go forward. If I'm Bayern Munich, if I am PSG, if I'm wherever he wants to go, even if I'm Man United, I'm looking at that and going, I'm not sure if I want to take this on. That's me. I know football is a very different game and there's a lot more to it, but yeah, that's just how I feel about it.
I can see him going to Man United, if I'm honest. Centre-backs. They don't really care about egos because, you know, Man United are exactly where they are in the league because they have an ego problem, if I'm honest. And I think he'll fit the bill. But I think the one thing that he hasn't really taken on board, which I think will affect him, is yes, he's had a few Fulham fans, you know, a bit disgruntled about the way he's handled things, and you know, and that's one thing. But when there's a you make a mistake, and you know, their fan base are relentless. Oh, I mean, so you look at Harry Maguire, and I'm going to go on record here and say that I still rate Harry Maguire as a centre back. I think
me too.
He makes a mistake, but I don't think it's always his fault. But it's been made into this kind of meme and this kind of joke that, oh, Harry Maguire again, what a donkey. And I can see him getting the same treatment because he is a high risk, high reward centre back. It's just how he plays. And I think he'll complement a top six, maybe European kind of challenging club in the way that he plays. However, he's not refined. Therefore, he will make mistakes. So I can see him potentially going to, you know, West Ham, being that kind of player. But I think what West Ham fans don't realize is that he is basically Diop in the same way that they were so happy to get rid of him. But he is that player that can make mistakes. And he'll, for every two or three amazing games he'll have an absolute stinker or a horror mistake, which, you know, that will capitalize and be made fun of or become this kind of scapegoat. And I think he would become that scapegoat. But I also see him being a high playing center back in terms of the quality of team, just because he's technically English national, homegrown. So he ticks that box for Premier League teams. And he's a freebie. And that is just a godsend to people. Like, you can see him going back to Man City just to be a tick box exercise. He won't get a game, but he'll fit the homegrown aspect and they'll have him in the squad. He won't play very much, but you know, there he has got that element to him being an appeal to that kind of club. But personally, I could potentially see him going to a Man United or a Tottenham just to sort of tick that box, but also play, just because they're not necessarily that strong in the centre-back area. But his stats, I think Kotti Chatko did some comparisons with Fulham centre-backs, and he actually comes out quite flattering in the terms of how good of a centre-back he actually has been for us. Therefore, I can actually see him going to a higher than mid-table, but whether he'll be a starter there, I don't think so. He'll probably just be a sort of a bit part player, especially when the mistakes will come, the confidence will drop just from the shower of abuse that you get from these bigger clubs and their international fans. It's relentless.
Yeah. It seems fitting, actually, that I get to have the last word on Tosin. Not that it's the end of the season, but I get to have a say here. Look, I see Tosin in two parts. One, his footballing ability. I feel like we have seen the best of him. I actually don't. I'm not sure that he is going to push on to a serious another level. I could be wrong. I could eat my hat, but and maybe a better team than Fulham can actually hide and absorb some of his mistakes from time to time, and they don't actually hurt that team as much as they hurt a Fulham team. Again, I could be wrong, but my biggest issue with Tosin has always been what I've seen is his attitude. And yeah, I don't know the guy, so maybe I'm being unfair, but it always seems like he's kind of stood on the outer. Always seems like he thought he was better than us and Fulham. Mm-hmm. And I don't enjoy that, and I'm certain his fan base at Fulham have not enjoyed that. This has been running for a long time. One could blame his manager, because his manager is the guy probably stirring the pot and trying to, encouraging him to play his cards the way they played out. But I'd also say you tend to get the managers you deserve, because you're probably two peas in a pod. So he's old enough to pick the right person to represent him. And there's surely many, many different evils out there to represent you. Look, as a human being, I wish the guy well, but I thank him for his service, because he actually has been, from time to time, he's been really good for us. But in the final analysis, you want a player who wants to be part of the club. And it's as simple as that. And if he doesn't want to be part of it, jog on, mate. And that's kind of how I feel about it. And so, yeah, good luck to him. I don't wish any ill on him, but I'm not sorry to see him go, because I'd rather see the smiling face of Kelvin Bassey, just so happy for his players around him when they do well, so clearly loving being part of Fulham, and someone like that, I'd rather move on to welcoming that person with open arms. It couldn't happen fast enough for me.
You are invited to the Discord, though, Tosin, because it is free. So
it is free. I'll probably get stuck in even more because I'm holding back a little bit, like I feel I should. But yeah, absolutely. I was going to say that. Thanks very much for reminding me, anyway, Sam. If you haven't already picked up on, we did start a new Discord last week. It's a place where you can come and chat. So please jump on, follow the link. It's in all of our social links, and it will continue to be over the next days as we try and find you a way in. So, but please do join us there. It's a great way to interact with other Fulham fans, and it's just a very easy and convenient. Can I say better than Twitter? Like far better than Twitter.
Way better than Twitter.
In environment, it's just easy to use.
Get rid of all the ads and the OnlyFans girls and all that crap. So
yeah. I mean, look, I'll go on OnlyFans if you'll join the Discord. Like, I mean, I'm sure I can work that out somehow. Like, feed back into like the pod.
Yep, thanks for that, Sam. In addition to that, please do like and subscribe wherever you can to the podcast. It really is helpful to us, and we really, really appreciate it. But by and large, please jump into the Discord, because that's really where we're going to be focusing our efforts going forward, and that's where you probably get the best bang for your buck, which is free. Skibby, thank you so much. It's been a long one, but I think there's been a lot to cover. I keep trying to keep out of the and away from the Tosin conversation, but it has kind of dragged us along tonight. And I think it's necessary. Well, we had to have it.
It was the biggest talking point of the week, so no, that's all good. But no, thank you guys for having me, and yeah, as I'm sure we've all said, join the Discord and you may bump into me in a match day pub. So always happy to have chats and tell me how wrong I am about things. So no, thanks for having me and look forward to the next one.
And Sam, thank you as always. You got another early night tonight. Well, it's 12:30 where you are, but that's actually an early one for you.
Yeah, it's relatively early. Look, you won't find me at a pub, but I like being like a mythical kind of creature in the Fulham fan base. That's kind of unattainable. But you can still find me here and you can find me on Discord. And as always, thank you very much for having me.
Well, it has to be part of the plan, doesn't it? I mean, the three of us have to get over there at some point. I'm starting to get really... Yeah, I'm starting to get very jealous of like being far too close to Skippy and Dave talking about their match day experiences, gearing up for their match, gearing up for their beers. And I'm feeling a little left out, and feeling like further away than I was a year ago. Somehow,
we should start a crowdfund or like something.
I was just thinking that.
Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah, all expenses paid.
yeah. And on that note, thanks again, guys. Thanks, everyone, for listening and putting up with us. Always enjoyed the chat. Jack did put a slide up mentioning what game we've got on next week. I don't even know. That's Brentford, how much I live in the moment. Yeah, of course it's Brentford. Absolutely.
Brentford away.
Oh, God.
And what a game to forget. But, yeah, that's a big one to look forward to. No doubt we'll be talking about it midweek. But... for this pod, thanks again, everyone, and come on, you Whites.